Good morning. Welcome to those of you who are gathered here today, and welcome to those of you who are joining us via live stream. This is the third and final installment of our Three Women and a Baby series with the Reverend Dr. Julie Faith Parker. It's been so fun and really a gift to have her with us these past 3 weeks. So will you just thank her by offering her some applause in this moment? Was really so fun to just be a fly on the wall last week and kind of take in your all the drama. It was great. And just as a reminder, next week you're stuck with me doing dudes and duds, just the kind of the bozos who have nothing on these kind of amazing women that we've met over the past weeks. And then the 29th, there will not be a session at 10 o'clock. So come late, just come to church, and then Elise and will be kind of doing a New Year's related thing with a special guest in early January. So anyway, Julie.
Thank you. Thank you so very much. It is such a joy to be here once again, and I thank you for having me. We've been looking in this series, Three Women and a Baby, at the women who are there at the birth of Jesus. We spoke about Elizabeth and her gift of faith and the support she provides to her cousin Mary. She affirms Mary's call and visit from the angel and reassures her. And then we looked at Mary and the strength of her courage, how her story was foreshadowed by Zechariah, how she was young and scared, and yet she took great risks doing what God called her to do. And she spoke of her radical theology in the Magnificat. Today we're going to look at Anna and the power of vision. How does she lead us forward on the journey into Christ's life? So let's take a look at her story in the Bible, which comes to us from Luke 2. I'm going to contextualize this a bit by going to the wider text, starting at the very beginning of Luke 2, because this is the part that we know so well. Last week, we did our Christmas pageant with wonderful help from our actors here, our Off-Broadway production, and we ended with the part that we know very well, and I imagine you'll see in your Christmas pageant next week, in those days a decree went out from Caesar Augustus. Does this part sound familiar to us? Yes. Perhaps the story about Zechariah and Elizabeth was not so familiar to us. The part about Mary we know, although we rarely hear her Magnificat in Christmas pageants, and the part about Anna is not as familiar to us. So we're going to look just very briefly at what leads up to Anna's story. After the story of Elizabeth, then the story of Mary, we have this story about Caesar Augustus. We're not going to read it. You know it. We're just going to skim it. This registration, people going to be registered. And here we know that Joseph makes this trip. Oh, sorry, we went to Genesis there. How'd that happen? Here we go. And so we see that Joseph makes this trip to be registered with Mary while they're expecting a child. It came for them to deliver. No room at the inn. You know, of course, in the Christmas pageant, the innkeeper is always a big part. Not in the text, just for the record. No innkeeper. But there's no room for them. We have the shepherds in the fields, and then we have the angel and these wonderful tidings, and all of this is very familiar. Okay, let's go back to Luke 2. Sorry, but I'm not quite sure what my program is doing. No problem. Here we go. Okay. And all of this is very familiar to us. Glory to God in the highest. And the shepherds go, and they find Mary and Joseph, and the shepherds tell what has been happening, and Mary knows all these things and ponders them in her heart. And then they go to the temple to circumcise they've circumcised Jesus, and then they go to the temple for this law of the purification. We looked at this a little bit last week, and the sacrifices that women were to give after they had a child. If you were rich, you would give a large animal as an offering, like an ox if you were really rich, or maybe a sheep, or a ram, or a goat, or if you were really poor, you'd just give two birds, two turtle doves, which is what Mary brings to the temple. And so she comes and brings this pair of two turtle doves to the temple. And, okay, sorry, you know, we're gonna say goodbye to this. We know where we are in the story now. Let's go to this passage about Anna right here. Before this, we have Simeon, who was a righteous man, who is there in the temple, and he makes this pronouncement about Anna, about Jesus, before Anna. And this is the presentation in the temple. But not only do we have Simeon, but then we also have Anna. And here is what happens in her passage, which is just these few verses. It's the only time she appears in the entire Bible. May I have a volunteer to read, please, for us, Luke 26 to 38? Would you please? Thanks.
There was also a prophet, Anna, the daughter of Phanuel of the tribe Asher. She was of great age, having lived with her husband 7 years after her marriage, then as a widow to the age of 84. She never left the temple, but worshiped there with fasting and prayer night and day. Continue.
Yes, please.
At that moment, she came and began to praise God and to speak about the child to all who were looking for the redemption of Jerusalem.
Okay, thank you so much. After this, Mary and Joseph go back to Nazareth, and then Jesus grows. We're told in verse 40, he's strong, filled with wisdom. The favor of God is upon him. And the next episode that we read about in Jesus' life is Jesus at the temple. You'll recall that story. They're heading back on their trip, Mary and Joseph, and they don't know where Jesus is. He disappears, and they miss him for how long? 3 days. They're looking for him. They're panicked, and they go back to the temple, and what is Jesus doing? He's there teaching the rabbis, and he says, did you not know I would be in my Father's house? Which you can read a lot of ways. Like, didn't you know I'd be in my Father's house? Or, didn't you know I'd be in my Father's house? So it sounds a little cheeky, but notice that the first time Jesus speaks is when he is a child. This is the first time Jesus speaks, and Anna is really a transitional prophet because she is the one who praises him and speaks about the child to all who are looking for the redemption of Jerusalem. So we see this pivotal moment here taking place. This scene is part of the presentation in the temple with Simeon and with Anna. Simeon is the righteous man there in the temple who speaks what we call the Nunc Dimittis. Do you know that passage? Lord, now let your servant depart in peace, for my eyes have seen the salvation of the world. Let's take a look at this in a brief movie scene. This scene is called The Presentation at the Temple.
What is the child's name?
Jeremiah.
Have you
heard of him? Yes,
ma'am. Is the mother pure?
Yes, she is.
Thank you. Next.
This is my firstborn son. We are here to present him to the Lord according to the law. These are the turtle doves for the sacrifice.
Have you had him circumcised?
8 days after his birth, according to the law.
Is the mother pure?
The prescribed number of days has passed.
What is the child's name?
Jesus.
Jesus.
I'll say to it. I was waiting. Mary. Here he is. Now, O Lord, allow your servant to depart in peace, as you have promised, for my eyes have seen your salvation, light to illuminate mankind, and the glory of your people, Israel. I knew that I would not die before seeing him, and now I have seen him.
Father! You need to sign the papers.
Yes, certainly.
I warn you, my child. Your son will mean the ruin of many.
Uncle.
What do you mean, the ruin? He's the Messiah, the savior of us all. You too said that.
He will be a sign of contradiction. Because of him, the thoughts of all hearts will be revealed. And you, my daughter.
And me? Please tell me. Don't hide anything from me.
A sword will pierce your soul.
Where was Anna in our film clip? She was nowhere in our film clip. This is called, this scene, the presentation of Jesus in the temple. And as we see in the text, she is there. She is here, she's worshiping. She never left the temple. She is very much a part of this scene. Why do you think these movie producers did not include her in the presentation of the temple scene of their movie about Mary? She's a woman that may be part of it. Certainly, that's one possibility. What does she say? She doesn't say anything in the Bible. That's exactly right. If she had lines, don't you think they'd have to include them? Or at least maybe take a little more seriously the possibility of working Anna into this film? But she doesn't say anything. Let's go back to week one when we were talking about the Gospel of Luke. As you may recall, if you were here, I spoke about Luke having more stories of women than any other gospel, 26 more stories. And scholars believe that perhaps he had access to a women's source. But when we look closely, we see that in nearly all of these stories of women, they have supportive roles and they are silent. Notice here, she has no words. Does she seem like she's an important person in this temple complex? Why? She's there for her whole entire life. She is a fixture in the temple. She is very much a part of it. And what is she doing there? She's a prophet. She's worshiping. She's fasting. She's praying. It's like the monastic tradition in some ways, this life of prayer and contemplation and devotion that helps to uphold the community spiritually. This is what she is doing. And then she recognizes Jesus and she's praising God and speaking about him to all who are looking for the redemption of Jerusalem. Another emphasis that we've mentioned in the book of Luke is that of prophecy. We spoke about Zechariah being a prophet, one of the prophets in the Hebrew Bible, and he wants to show Jesus as the fulfillment of prophecy and as a prophet himself. And so he brings in prophets and references from the Hebrew scriptures. Has anyone here studied Greek? Wonderful. Perhaps, can you read that name in purple for us? Kaihane, that name is, that's it, I heard it, thank you.
It's Hannah.
Hannah, yeah. That name is Hannah. If you notice very carefully, this is an aspiration, and this means that you pronounce an H sound. So there's a prophet, Hannah. This is Hannah. In the New Testament, it refers to Hannah. Do you recall our looking at Hannah last week? Remember, Hannah is the mother of Samuel, and she gives this great song of praise after she receives her annunciation that this child will be born, after her child is born, and Mary, after she receives her annunciation, sings this great song of praise. So Hannah is the same name in the Old Testament as we have in the New Testament. So this connection is being made. And who is Hannah? The mother of Samuel. And who is Samuel? One of the great prophets of the Hebrew scriptures. So in subtle yet consistent ways, Luke is connecting Jesus to prophecy, and not just the male prophets of the Hebrew scriptures, but also women in this tradition of prophecy. She is a prophet, and that tells us a lot about her, who she is, and the work that she does. Prophets are people who strengthen the bond between God and the people, and they are extremely important in the biblical tradition. What prophets can you name, please, in the Hebrew scriptures?
Amos,
good, thank you. Others?
Isaiah,
good. Hosea, good. Jeremiah, good. Jonah's a prophet, good. Gad is a tribe. Gad is one of the tribes. Nathan is the one who speaks to David. Good. So there are lots of prophets. The three major prophets of the Hebrew scriptures are Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel. Why are they the major prophets? Because... Exactly it. That is exactly it. There's no theological reason whatsoever. The deep reason is because their books are longer. Then we get Hosea. Yes?
Wasn't Isaiah and Jeremiah the two guys at the time of the Babylonian exile?
Isaiah's good question. Isaiah's a little tricky because there are actually three prophets that are part of the Isaianic school, and we have different historical times. So first Isaiah is before the exile, second Isaiah is during the exile, and third Isaiah is after the exile. But Jeremiah and Ezekiel are during the time of the Babylonian exile. That's right, before, leading up to, and then during the exile. Can you name any women prophets for me in the Hebrew scriptures? Good, thank you. Eileen studied with me at General. Can you see that? Good for you. That's my student. Okay. Indeed, there are women prophets. What is a prophet? We'll get to those in a moment. A prophet, the Greek word is prophetes, and it means one who speaks forth, proclaims, speaks before, or speaks of the future. So it is an important public role. In Hebrew, the word is navi, probably related to Akkadian. Akkadian is a Semitic, Eastern Semitic, cuneiform language, and it means to call or announce, one who calls or one who is called. And both of these aspects speak about what it is like to be a prophet. You're called to this work, and then you speak forth on behalf of God. As we see time and time again in the scriptures, when a prophet is called by God, do they say, "Goody"? No, they don't. There is a pattern of people saying, no, please choose someone else, not me, and not without reason. Because as they discover, and as perhaps you yourself know, when the finger of God is upon you, you had better watch out, because chances are excellent your troubles are just beginning. So in Hebrew, not only do we have this word navi, but we also have a feminine form, naviyah, meaning prophet. Prophet, sometimes you'll see it translated as prophetess, as the female form, but they're both prophets. It's the exact same word. And we do have a number of women prophets in the scriptures. We have the prophet Miriam. We see Miriam's a very important person in the Hebrew scriptures. She's mentioned four times, all the way through the tradition of Micah, actually more than this. The Numbers passage is a little bit longer. But here we see her, the prophet Miriam, taking a tambourine, and she's going out with the women and dancing. She is showing the joy after the Exodus that the people are experiencing when they have just escaped from slavery. These are in canonical order, starting with the one that appears first in the Hebrew Bible. That's Miriam in Exodus. And then we have Deborah in Judges chapter 4. Deborah is called a prophetess, the wife of Lapidoth. She judges Israel. That phrase, wife of Lapidoth, is a terrible translation. The Hebrew is Ishet Lapidoth, and our translators make it sound like Lapidoth is some man in the Bible. There is no man named Lapidoth, could be, but he's never referred to any other time. But the word Lapha means flame. Ish, and the word for wife and woman is the same. Instead of Deborah, wife of Lapidoth, I prefer Deborah, a fiery woman. And indeed she is. She is a prophet, she is a judge, and she is a military commander. Go home and read Judges 4 and 5, a very powerful woman in the Hebrew scriptures. And then we have the story of Huldah in 2 Kings 22. This is the story about a scroll that is found in the temple, and the king asks that it be brought to this prophet, Huldah, and she reads this scroll and she interprets it, and she tells the king what needs, this is King Hezekiah, she tells him what is going to take, what he should do according, it's King of Josiah, it's 22. So she tells him what he should do according to this scroll. And so here we have this scroll and she is interpreting it. What's amazing is at this time in Jerusalem, we also have Jeremiah as a prophet. We also have Ezekiel around the time of the exile, but as the prophet Huldah to whom the king goes. And then we have Isaiah's wife. We looked at her briefly. She is the one who is going to, she conceives and she is going to bear a child. And she does. The prophetess, who is this prophetess? We're not sure. Some scholars think that this is the wife of Isaiah, because the eye went to the prophetess, it would be his wife. And some scholars suggest that perhaps this is an early version of a clergy couple. Could be, right? Because we've got the prophet and the prophetess. And then finally, we have the prophet Noadiah. We don't know much about her. She's mentioned briefly in Nehemiah chapter 6. And she is someone whom Nehemiah is afraid of. So she must have been someone with great power. Sometimes in the Bible, we have characters that have names and no stories. Sometimes in the Bible, we have characters with stories and no names. And she is one of them. But there are not only prophets from long ago and far away. Prophecy is a very well-attested cross-cultural phenomenon. There are prophets all around us, not only in the Bible, not only in the past, but around the world today, and perhaps even in our own communities. And when we recognize the ways in which prophets work, it makes it easier for us to notice their workings in the world. These are some of the roles that prophets perform. Let's talk about them. One is that of a priest who leads in public cultic functions, here often at the temple, but someone who is speaking this word and helping the people to feel closer to God. Overall, that is the role of the prophet, as an intermediary, as someone who helps to strengthen this bond between God and God's people, which a priest certainly does. And that a preacher, one who speaks messages from God, a messenger. A medium is someone who is a bridge between the living and the spiritual, so helps to put people in contact with the spiritual realm. A necromancer, more specifically, is someone who speaks to the dead. You may recall in 1 Samuel 28, there's a story about a woman whom King Saul goes to when he's not sure what's going to happen with a battle. And this woman brings up Samuel from the dead, and she gives this prophecy to Saul. She is a necromancer, one who talks with the dead. A diviner is someone who has extra insight into the divine realm. A seer is someone who can see into the future. We often think of prophets as someone who can look into the future. That is one small sliver of what prophets do. Mystics are devoted to otherworldly practices, and a shaman can tap into the power of another world and harness it and direct it, almost like a spiritual funnel. A shaman takes this power, this spiritual energy, and uses it and filters it through him or herself, and then channels it for some purpose on earth, often that of healing. And then a wonder worker is someone who can perform miracles, which we see, of course, with Jesus as a prophet and also in the stories of Elijah and Elisha. These are not hard and fast distinctions. You think of Jesus as a prophet, and you can see he covers many of these roles. He's a preacher, and he's a diviner, and he's a mystic and a seer and a wonder worker. So there are a number of prophets fill a number of these roles. One of the things that prophets, as I mentioned, are best known for is predicting into the future. I'd like to ask you, please, to take the index card that you have and your pencil. And if you don't have one, you can come up here and get one, or you can just think of a question. And I'd like you to ask you to please write down a yes or no question that you would like the answer to. Okay. Please write down a yes or no question that you would like to know the answer to. I'm going to ask for a couple of volunteers who would be willing to share their questions. So that's where we're going with this. So a yes or no question that you would like to know the answer to. I'm going to give you a moment to think about that, please, and write it down on your index card. You watching at home can do the same. Okay, I'll just give you another couple seconds on that. Okay, now I'm going to ask for some volunteers, please. May I have a couple of volunteers who would be willing to come up here and read their questions? Come on up. You just want to take the mic? That's fine.
Do animals go to heaven?
I'd love to answer that after my talk on Anna. Yes, I think they do. John Wesley thought they did because they were good, kind souls. He loved his horse and he said yes. So that's where I'd vote. Sure.
Are prophets also advisors to the king?
Are prophets also advisors to the king? Well, let's take, I'm sorry, I thought your question was a real question. I'm going to come over to you with my magic eight ball. Do animals go to heaven? We're going to answer it this way. So I've got a magic eight ball here, and we're going to answer this. And what does it say, please?
Yes.
It says yes. Actually, it says yes, definitely. The magic eight ball says yes, definitely. So do animals go to heaven? The magic eight ball agrees with me. Yes, definitely. And how about you, please? What is your question again?
Are prophets also advisors to the king?
Are prophets also advisors to the king? Let's see what the, is that a yes, okay, yes, no question? It is definitely so. Does anyone have a question related to their own life? No? Okay, I want you to think of a question related to your own life now. Just think of a question related to your own life, please. A yes, no question that you would like the answer for. Does anyone have one?
Yeah.
Good. Okay, let's have over here, please. What's your question?
Can a true believer in Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior be deceived by Satan?
Can a true believer in Jesus Christ be deceived by Satan? What does it say?
Don't count on it.
Don't count on it. Okay. Anyone else with a question related to their life? Yes, please.
This is really broad. Is 2020 going to be better for me than 2019?
Is 2020 going to be better than 2019? What's it say?
I'm afraid to read it.
Oh, it says, signs point to yes. Okay. Okay. How is what we do with this magic eight ball like prophecy, and how is it not like prophecy? Well, often people ask the prophets questions that were very related to their lives and often the political circumstances surrounding their lives, which we heard some of here. It's like biblical prophecy in that we want to know the answer. We're eager to find out. If it's good, we hope it's true. And if it's bad, we want to ignore it. That's how it was with biblical prophecy too. We might want to hear the prediction because we're curious. We might not want to because we might be afraid of the answers. Biblical prophecy was not for individuals though. It was for the whole community. And it has wider implications beyond one person. Biblical prophecy is also about a cause, about a passion, and about justice. And we may or may not place a lot of belief in the magic eight ball, but people placed a lot of belief in biblical prophecy because they felt it was from a divine source. Anna acts as a prophet. How do we know? Let's return to her story and see what else we can learn about her. So here let's go through this. So she is a prophet. We see now that she is part of a strong tradition of women prophets in the Bible. She is the daughter of Phanuel. Who is Phanuel? We have no idea. Phanuel is mentioned no place else in the scriptures. And Phanuel is her father, not her husband. So that speaks a little bit about her as an individual from her family of origin, not being associated with the man to whom she was married. Of the tribe of Asher. Who is Asher? Asher is one of the sons of Leah. You'll recall back to the Hebrew scriptures, we have the 12 tribes of Israel coming from the 12 sons of Jacob, and Asher is one of his sons with his first wife, Leah. The word Asher in Hebrew means happy, and so that bodes well for the tribe from which she comes. She is a great age. What does that mean in the context of the scriptures? We talked, when we mentioned Elizabeth, we talked about how hard it was to live to be an old age because there was so much that could kill you. The average lifespan was only between 30 and 40, but she lives to be a very great age. And in the Hebrew Bible, the signs of blessing are children, old age, and property. So here she has this old age. It is one of the signs. If you reach these, any of these things, you are blessed. And so she is indeed blessed. So she's lived so long after being with her husband. She has lived to the age of 84, 7 years with her husband, and then so much longer as a widow. She's a widow. What do we know about widows in the Bible? There's a lot of concern for widows in the Bible. Concern for the widow, the orphan, and the sojourner. The widow, the orphan, and sojourner. People who are really on the fringes. And yet, often we see widows as women of significant power because they have a voice, because they have to. There is no man who is speaking up for them. Naomi, for example, you'll recall her story. She is a widow. We also have Judith, if you know that story from the Apocrypha, she is a widow. Ruth is a widow, she speaks. Tamar in Genesis 28. So here we have some powerful women who are widows. She is, her name, Anna, like the name Hannah, means grace. So we have these terms, grace and happiness, that are associated with her at the beginning of her story. And she is a prophet, so a woman with power. She never leaves the temple. She worships there. She is extremely devout. And what does she do with her power? Look at this last verse. She uses it to praise God. She speaks about the child to all who were looking for the redemption of Jerusalem. How I wish Luke had put in those words that she was saying. How I wish he told us the joyful psalm that she was giving, just as Mary did, just as Hannah did. But we don't know these words. We can only imagine them. She evangelizes about Jesus, and she tells everyone about this child, that he is there for the redemption of Jerusalem. The shepherds earlier had talked about the birth of this child, but she goes further, saying that he is the one who will bring redemption. So in this way, she acts in the tradition of prophets, one who's able to see visions and speak about them. And she provides the link between this and Jesus in the temple, a key role between his infancy and his childhood and the ministry that stretches forward. She is the one who prepares us for his role as a public prophet, as he proclaims God's love. Prophets are passionate people. Can you think of any prophets in our world today?
That are credible?
Sure. I'm going to tell you, I was here the week before last, and I heard a sermon up in the sanctuary. It was about gun violence. I would call that prophetic. Would you? I would say, I felt like I was listening to the words of a prophet in that sanctuary. Because, yes, please?
What about Greta? What is her
Oh, you're going to Thunberg. That's right. Thank you so much. She's another prophet. She is one who is speaking truth to power. William Sloan Coffin, you recall him, pastor at Riverside for many years. He would speak that's the role of a prophet, one who speaks truth to power, which she certainly does, which our preacher Reverend Lavolsi spoke about as well. Speaking truth to power, being brave enough, passionate enough. That was a passionate sermon. Speaking the word as you know it to be true. What other prophets can you think of? Yes, please.
Deepak Chopra. Deepak Chopra,
thank you so very much. One who is also taking this spiritual energy and sharing it with the world. Whom else can you think of? Desmond Tutu is a very good example. One who speaks of love in the face of hate. We think also of Martin Luther King Jr., perhaps, right? He is another prophet. Prophets need to be those who lead us to the edge, who take us forward, who bring us where we haven't been before in terms of our relationship with God. And yet they can't go too far, because if they go too far, we write them off. They're ridiculous. It's just too much. It's a fine line that the prophet has to tread in leading us forward, but making sure that the people are with you there. If you go too far, especially for women, they get labeled as a witch, right? That's what happens in the story of 1 Kings 28 of the necromancer. You'll read in the Bible in the heading, it says the witch of Endor. No place in the text does it say witch. That's what our editors of our English translations have done, to write her off a little bit, but not in the text. Prophets are very passionate people, and as such, they serve as vents in the society for the frustration and the resentment and the aggression that may be building up. Prophets rise in times of crisis, like the Babylonian exile. When things are very difficult, that's when the prophets bubble forth. Why? Exactly. The people need them. They need them to be consoled, and they need them to show the way to go forward. So look around, my friends. Notice the prophets among you. Think of all the different ways that prophets can work in this world, and be ready to proclaim whatever prophetic gifts God has given to you. The prophets are truth tellers who speak truth to the powerful and the powerless alike, and facilitate this divine human connection. But the amazing thing about prophecy is no matter what happens, especially in times of crisis, they lead us to grow in faith. And that is exactly what Anna does, whose name means grace, as she shows forth the grace of God, tying together the stories of the women who were before her, proclaiming Jesus' power of redemption. She leads us, as Luke does, to burst into song. Remember how we talked about all the songs in the Gospel of Luke? Anna doesn't have one, but let us sing this song about her. Would you join with me, please, in singing this song to the tune of O Come, O Come, Emmanuel? The prophet Anna calls us by God's grace to live God's love in every time and place. A messenger of hope, light, and joy has come to us in Mary's precious boy. Rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel shall come to thee, O Israel. Anna, the prophet, is a messenger of hope. Barely known to us, she is a pivotal figure in Jesus' story. After she proclaims Jesus as the one who is the hope for Jerusalem, the next scene of the Bible has Jesus as a boy in the Jerusalem temple, teaching the rabbis. Like Zechariah, she is a prophet in the book of Luke. Like Elizabeth, she is an old woman with deep faith who has an important message of hope and assurance. Like Mary, she continues the faithful tradition of women witnesses in the Bible, courageously living into her calling. May Anna, a prophet of vision whose name means grace. Lead us this Advent and always to joyfully live and generously share God's abundant love. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. It has been such a joy to be with you. And I feel like we have developed a little bit of a bond, so much so that I'm going to dare to ask a favor of you, really. The name Anna means favor and grace. And I'd like to ask if you would please consider writing a Christmas card to my former students who are incarcerated. I have some students who live in Pickaway Prison in Orient, Ohio, and I studied with them for a year. And Christmas time is a really hard time if you're in prison. They don't do anything really to make it special, and all of the loneliness that becomes accentuated this time of year is extra hard if you feel so isolated so much of the time. So I have some addresses here with names and then numbers. The numbers of people who are incarcerated, unfortunately, are extremely important. If you leave out their number, they won't get the letter. If you just put on their name, they won't get it. If you just leave on their number, they would get it without the name. Isn't that sad? So let's treat people like people, no matter where they would live. And if you would be so kind as to send a Christmas card to someone who's incarcerated, that would be just one small way that we can all live God's love. Thank you. Thank you so much.